Chapter 55. In a word, his life was intolerable. The dinner hour of the 12th century, it is known, was very early. In fact, people dined at 10 o'clock in the morning. And after dinner Rowena sat mum under her canopy, embroidered with the arms of Edward the Confessor, working with her maidens at the most hideous pieces of tapestry, representing the tortures and martyrdoms of her favorite saints, and not allowing a soul to speak above his breath, except when she chose to cry out in her own shrill voice, when a handmaid made a wrong stitch, or let fall a ball of worsted. It was a dreary life. Lamba, we have said, never ventured to crack a joke, save in a whisper, when he was 10 miles from home, and then Sir Wilfred Ivanhoe was too weary, and Blue Devil to laugh, but hunted in silence, moodily bringing down deer and wild boar with shaft and quarrel. Then he besought Robin of Huntingdon, the jolly outlaw, Nathless, to join him, and go to the help of their fair sire King Richard, with a score or two of lances. But the Earl of Huntingdon was a very different character from Robin Hood the Forester. There was no more conscientious magistrate in all the county than his lordship. He was never known to miss church or quarter sessions. He was the strictest game proprietor in all the riding, and sent scores of poachers to Botany Bay. Man who has a stake in the country, my good Sir Wilfred, Lord Huntingdon said, with rather a patronizing air. His lordship had grown immensely fat since the king had taken him into grace, and required a horse as strong as an elephant to mount him. Man with a stake in the country ought to stay in the country. Property has its duties as well as its privileges, and a person of my rank is bound to live on the land from which he gets his living. Amen, sang out the Reverend Tuck, his lordship's domestic chaplain, who had also grown as sleek as the abbot of Jorvaulx, who was as prim as a lady in his dress, wore bergamot in his handkerchief, and had his poll shaved and his beard curled every day. And so sanctified was his reverence grown, that he thought it was a shame to kill the pretty deer, though he ate of them still hugely, both in pasties, and with French beans and currant jelly, and being shown a quarter staff upon a certain occasion, handled it curiously, and asked at that ugly great stick was? Lady Huntingdon, late Maid Marian, had still some of her old fun and spirits, and poor Ivanhoe begged and prayed that she would come and stay at Rotherwood occasionally, and eke her the general dullness of that castle. But her ladyship said that Rowena gave herself such airs, and bored her so intolerably with stories of King Edward the Confessor, that she preferred any place rather than Rotherwood, which was as dull as if it had been at the top of Mount Athos. The only person who visited it was Athelstan. His Royal Highness the Prince Rowena of course called him, whom the lady received with royal honors. As he had the guns fired, and the footman turned out with presented arms when he arrived, helped him to all Ivanhoe's favorite cuts of the mutton or the turkey, and forced her poor husband to light him to the state bedroom, walking backwards, holding a pair of wax candles. At this hour of bedtime the thane used to be in such a condition that he saw two pair of candles and two Ivanhoes reeling before him. Let us hope it was not Ivanhoe that was reeling, but only his kinsman's brains muddled with the quantities of drink which it was his daily custom to consume. Rowena said it was the crack which the wicked boy Gilbert, the Jewess's other lover, Wilfred my dear, gave him on his royal skull, which caused the prince to be disturbed so easily, but added that drinking became a person of royal blood, and was but one of the duties of his station. Sir Wilfred of Ivanhoe saw it would be of no avail to ask this man to bear him company on his projected tour abroad, but still he himself was every day more and more bent upon going, and he long cast about for some means of breaking to his Rowena his firm resolution to join the king. He thought she would certainly fall ill if he communicated the news too abruptly to her. He would pretend a journey to York to attend a grand jury, then a call to London on law business, or to buy stock, then he would slip over to Calais by the packet, by degrees as it were, and so be with the king before his wife knew that he was out of sight of Westminster Hall. Suppose your honor says you are going as your honor would say bow, to a goose, plump, short, and to the point, said Wamba the jester, who was Sir Wilfrid's chief counselor and attendant, epandant her highness would bear the news like a Christian woman. Tush, Malapert. I will give thee this trap, said Sir Wilfrid, in a fine tone of high tragedy indignation. Who knowest not the delicacy of the nerves of high-born ladies? And she faint not, write me down, Hollander. I will wager my bauble against an Irish billet of exchange, that she will let your honor go off readily. That is, if you press not the matter too strongly, Wamba answered, knowingly. And this Ivano found to his discomfiture. For one morning at breakfast, adopting a dejigged air, as he sipped his tea, he said, My love, I was thinking of going over to pay His Majesty a visit in Normandy. Upon which, laying down her muffin, which, since the royal Alfred baked those cakes, had been the chosen breakfast cate of noble Anglo-Saxons, and which a kneeling page tendered to her on the salver, chased by the Florentine, Benvenuto Cellini, And do you think of going, Wilfrid, my dear, the lady said. And the moment the tea things were removed, and the tables and their trestles put away, she set about mending his linen, and getting ready his carpet bag. So Sir Wilfrid was as disgusted at her readiness to part with him as he had been weary of staying at home, which caused Wamba the fool to say, Mary, gossip, thou art like the man on shipboard, who, when the boatswain flogged him, did cry out, oh, ! Wherever the rope end fell on him. Which caused Master Boatswain to say, Plague on thee, fellow, and a pies on thee, knave, wherever I hit thee there is no pleasing thee. And truly there are some backs which fortune is always belaboring, thought Sir Wilfrid with a groan, and mine is one that is ever sore. So, with a moderate retinue, whereof the knave Wamba made one, and a large woolen comforter round his neck, which his wife's own white fingers had woven, Sir Wilfrid of Ivanhoe left home to join the king his master. Rowena, standing on the steps, poured out a series of prayers and blessings, most edifying to hear, as her lord mounted his charger, which his squires led to the door. Tea was the duty of the British female of rank, she said. To suffer all in the cause of her sovereign. She would not fear loneliness during the campaign. She would bear up against widowhood, desertion, and an unprotected situation. My cousin Athelstan will protect thee, said Ivanhoe, with profound emotion, as the tears trickled down his bassinet, and bestowing a chaste salute upon the steel-clad warrior, Rowena modestly said he hoped his highness would be so kind. Then Ivanhoe's trumpet blew. Then Rowena waved her pocket handkerchief. Then the household gave a shout. Then the pursuivant of the good knight, Sir Wilfrid the Crusader, flung out his banner, which was argent, a gules cramoisy with three moors impaled sable, colon. Then Wamba gave a lash on his mule's haunch, and Ivanhoe, heaving a great sigh, turned the tail of his war horse upon the castle of his fathers. As they rode along the forest, they met Athelstan the Thane powdering along the road in the direction of Rotherwood on his great grey horse of a charger. Goodbye, good luck to you, old brick, cried the prince, using the vernacular Saxon. Itch into those Frenchmen, give it 'em over the face and eyes, and I'll stop at home and take care of Mrs. I. Thank you, kinsman, said Ivanhoe, looking, however, not particularly well pleased. And the chiefs shaking hands, the train of each took its different way, Athelstan's to Rotherwood, Ivanhoe's towards his place of embarkation. The poor knight had his wish, and yet his face was a yard long, and as yellow as a lawyer's parchment, and having longed to quit home many times these 3 years past, he found himself envying Athelstan, because, forsooth, he was going to Rotherwood. Which symptoms of discontent being observed by the witless Wamba, caused that absurd madman to bring his rebeck over his shoulder from his back, and to sing, Trocura. Ever I lost my five poor wits, I mind me of a Romish clerk, who sang how Care, the phantom dark, beside the belted horseman sits. Method I saw the greasy sprite jump up, but now behind my knight. Perhaps thou didst, knave, said Ivano, looking over his shoulder, and the knave went on with his jingle. And though he gallop as he may, I mark that cursed monster black still sits behind his honor's back, tight squeezing of his heart alloy. Like two black templars sit they there, beside one crupper, knight and care. O knight am I with pen and spear, to prance upon a bold destrier. I will not have black care prevail upon my long-eared charger's tail, for lo, I am a witless fool, and laugh at grief and ride a mule. And his bells rattled as he kicked his mule's sides. Silence, fool, said Sir Wilfred of Ivanhoe, in a voice both majestic and wrathful. If thou knowest not care and grief, it is because thou knowest not love, whereof they are the companions. Who can love without an anxious heart? How shall there be joy at meeting, without tears at parting? Did not see, that his honor or my lady shed many anon, thought Wamba the fool, but he was only a zany, and his mind was not right. Would not exchange my very sorrows for thine indifference, the knight continued. Here there is a sun, there must be a shadow. If the shadow offend me, shall I put out my eyes and live in the dark? No. I am content with my fate, even such as it is. The care of which thou speakest, hard though it may vex him, never yet rode down an honest man. I can bear him on my shoulders, and make my way through the world's press in spite of him. For my arm is strong, and my sword is keen, and my shield has no stain on it, and my heart, though it is sad, knows no guile. And here, taking a locket out of his waistcoat which was made of chain mail, the knight kissed the token, put it back under the waistcoat again, heaved a profound sigh, and stuck spurs into his horse. As for Wamba, he was munching a black pudding, whilst Sir Wilfred was making the above speech, which implied some secret grief on the knight's part, that must have been perfectly unintelligible to the fool, and so did not listen to a single word of Ivanhoe's pompous remarks. They travelled on by slow stages through the whole kingdom, until they came to Dover, whence they took shipping for Calais. And in this little voyage, being exceedingly seasick, and besides elated at the thought of meeting his sovereign, the good knight cast away that profound melancholy which had accompanied him during the whole of his land journey. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.